Okay, well, welcome back for part two of our session. For those of you who are listening by audio, we've been fed, and I have a fresh coffee. For those of you who are watching by video, this is my coffee. It is just riveting content. I don't know what I'm going to do with this. We got video from the sessions I did in Edson as well. They didn't bother emailing them to me because it would have shut down the internet. And so I've got this DVD with, 5 gigs of video files sitting on my desk. And I'm like, okay. Now I've got 2 full days of discussion and presentation, pretty similar to what we're doing here. And it's like, what am I going to do with it? So, but it's good. I just hope there are historians that are interested in this, because there's a lot of stuff. So if you're a historian and listening to this, there's a video. Good luck. Yeah. Where were we? We were about to get to the really neat stuff. So we've covered the blogs and podcasting and all that sort of stuff. And we get into RSS. RSS is, okay, I think you asked before how many of you knew about RSS, and it was about half of you now. You do? Yeah, of course. You have your own blog, don't you? No? Nothing you're going to admit to? Yeah, kind of.
Well, I just write websites for some of the Alaska state organizations.
Sure. Yeah. I love the answer, kind of. RSS. This link here, how to create an RSS file, is, oddly enough, my most popular article, not counting one on logical fallacies, which is an interesting statement in itself. And it's a little bit dated now. It's for RSS 0.91, which is a slightly older format, but I keep getting email on it, and it keeps working, so it's useful. And the reason why I wanted to bring up this article is, what am I stepping on? This half of a clip. Okay. This is an RSS file. Let me just expand. A little bit more. There we go. And the thing to notice about RSS is that it's a file written in XML. And you can tell it's XML because it's got all those angle brackets all over the place, which gives it that nice mysterious feel. But it really very simple, and that is the secret of its success. And if you're wondering, is RSS successful? It is by far and away the most widely used XML format there is, period. Second would probably be Dublin Core, but RSS is, there are millions, tens of millions, I think something like 30 million RSS feeds out there now, and growing by thousands every day. RSS is organized into things called channels.
And the reason why this is, it was originally developed by Netscape as a syndication format. They were thinking, I think they had this sort of TV mentality. And so every RSS feed is a channel. And the idea when they did it on Netscape is you picked the channels that you subscribe to, and then new content would come through these channels. So you define a channel. This is the channel for my own website and my own newsletter, OL Daily. And all I'm doing to define the channel is I give it a title, give it a link, give it an optional description, and an optional language. And for some reason, the web won't give me English in Canada. So I have to, it's either English UK or English US, and neither really works for me, but what do you do? So, and that's the definition of my channel. That's what defines my newsletter. And then I can optionally associate an image
with my channel, so you have a nice little image that shows up. And then in any given channel, there will be one or more items.
Now, if you think about this, think RSS came out and the intention was for newspapers and magazines and things like that to use it. So each item is roughly analogous to an article in a newspaper or in a magazine. So the channel is the whole magazine, and the items are articles. And again, very simple. The item title, the item location, description, and you're done. Now, there are some optional elements that you can add, and I mentioned some of them in this article, but this is a functional RSS feed, this minimal setup. It's just coincidence that I'm describing a hacking attack on my website when I wrote this article, but it's one of these things. And as you can see, I kept writing about it. you can have more than one item in the RSS feed. And that's it. Now, the reason I wrote this article, and I got a bunch of comments right away on this, the reason why I wrote this article, and if you notice the title is, and now it's going to take a while to come back, even though it was just up on the screen, how to create an RSS feed with Notepad, a web server, and a beer. And what I wanted to do with this article is to show that anyone using the barest, simplest tools can create an RSS feed. And so, of course, I immediately got comments saying, well, you can generate one automatically using this. You can generate one automatically using that. Yeah, I know that. But the point is, you don't have to. And because RSS feeds are so simple to create, it's very simple to write software that creates them for you. And we'll come back to that in a few moments. Now, why is RSS useful? Here's a site called Bloglines. Yeah, you knew I was going there. What Bloglines does, Bloglines is an RSS reader. It's a web-based RSS reader. And if I click to my feeds, now, like everything else, right, if you go to Bloglines, you need an account, so you use your ID, password, blah, 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 blah. Right? And I'm just going to turn down this text size again because it messes up the formatting. That's better. And so what I've got here, I'll just expand this out a bit. There we go. These are websites that I, or RSS feeds more accurately, that I read on a regular basis. And what is this? Enter username and password for secured does anyone know a place called Lewis Elementary? Wow. Whatever it is. I guess what happened is somebody has put password protection on their RSS feed that I'm harvesting or something. I don't know. Something different every day. You just never know what you're going to run into when you do this stuff live. So we were talking about Darren just earlier. Here is his blog, the one you were just looking at. And if you look at his blog there, here's the Make 'em Laugh thing that you were just looking at. And it shows up here. Whoops. Why is this doing this to me? That's what I wanted at all. Okay. So, and this is where some of this stuff begins to come together. He has a blog, and as we saw this morning, he inputs his blog posts in that. His blogging software, and all the blogging software that I've talked about so far, automatically creates an RSS feed. Automatic. You don't even need to think about it. That brand new WordPress blog that I created has an RSS feed. I haven't a clue what it is, but it's there. It's probably the world's most boring RSS feed. Actually, no, I've made some more boring ones. And what Bloglines does is
every once in a while, and I'm not sure what timing they're on, but it's pretty quick, surprisingly quick. Their website makes a request to Darren's or whoever else's website and reads the RSS file. And if it sees a new item, it adds it to the list. And then what I do is I use blog links to read the stuff from the list. Now you might say, oh, go ahead.
I'm just wondering if you told them to download them, how to show
you how to. Oh, yes. Excuse me. Well, sure. Could be. Where is it? That's right. Yeah, because I just leave it all open, don't I? Yeah. bloglines.com/public/downs. Right. You can all, yeah, I'm sorry, I completely forgot about that, because you can read what I read. Probably. Yeah, it'll show up a bit different because, you know, you're not going to have, like, when I read blog lines, I read just the stuff that I haven't read already. And when you read it, you just see whatever's there, whether or not I've read it, because you're not me. But here's a different site. And here's the link, just like before. And what have I got? Oh, I got my copies in front of the screen. Sorry about that. I'm the world's worst presenter. I really am. And the thing is, you might be saying, well, why don't you just go to the website? But think about this. You look at my list of feeds here. Here are all the websites that I read. That's just in edublogging. All right, and I'm still scrolling through them here. That's one category of the feeds that I read. And basically, for me, every day, I cover about 300, 400 websites. And I do it all from here. And when I'm doing it, and I'm going to go back to mine, because it's a bit easier so that you can see it. When I go through it, only the stuff that I haven't read yet shows up, and it shows up in bold. Right? Now, I had read Darren's a bit earlier. Here we go. Now, I have just the thing that I just read earlier now doesn't display. I can get it back if I want. All right, I'll just look at what he's done in the last 24 hours, and there it is. Right? So I haven't gone away. But the thing is, once I've read it, it sort of hides itself. So I go to blog lines, and I see all and only the stuff I haven't read. And blog lines brings in all the new stuff from these 300 or 400 websites, and I just sit there and I just zip through them. I don't need to type in the URLs or bookmarks or whatever for 300 different websites. And this is so useful, especially when you go to a website and there's nothing new. And so, like, that time is completely wasted because you've taken the time to go there and there was nothing. But with an RSS aggregator, if there's nothing, I see nothing. I don't even worry about it. And if there's something, that's what I see.
What was that URL again, please?
www.bloglines.com/public/down.
Everybody's learning to spell my name. Isn't that great?
So this is not actually a sequential.
Yeah, this is just what I normally look at.
And then, like,
each of those as a category, expand those categories, and look at the individual sites there.
I don't know if I know I need to add it to this.
So we don't see what another person like that is, but they're on
the. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure what his idea is, but yeah, technically you could. Yours, you put in there, and people will use his. I just don't know this is. Now, here's something neat.
You'll like this. Me being me, one of the sites that I aggregate in my aggregator is my own. Of course. What else would you do? So, here is OL Daily, which is my website. And I'll go on the one I haven't read yet. And so, here are my posts from Friday. I think. Yeah, it looks like it. And now for this, here are the subscribers. I got altogether on blog lines alone, I've got about 1,000 subscribers. 700 here. I have two separate versions of my feed. So. And what's neat is I can click, and now here are the people who are willing to admit in public that they read my blog on Bloglines. And as I go through this, there's Darren, should be probably DK something maybe. He might not be on there. No, it's not. But I can pick any person that I want. And just click on their name. Trying to pick someone I know. And see what they're subscribed to. And now I'm reading what one of my readers reads. And so there we go. Which is kind of neat. I like doing that. I don't do it as much as I should. I probably should do it more. If you're out there and you're just reading websites or blogs or whatever, typically, not always, but typically, what you'll find somewhere on the page, and I'm just going to my page to show you it, these little orange buttons. And those little orange buttons point to the RSS feed. And again, you can have a bookmarklet from Bloglines that'll let you subscribe to that directly. Now, Firefox, I think this will work. I take this XML, and I'll just drag it to my toolbar. And now it's in my toolbar. And it's not going to do it quite that right. No, it's just going to bookmark it. Firefox also has a built-in RSS aggregator, and so your browser will check this XML feed just like Bloglines does and update the links. Although I thought just dragging it would make that work, but it obviously didn't. I don't use it, and you might think, well, why wouldn't I use it? Because I don't want my browser to be an RSS aggregator, because my browser is always sitting there reading websites and it slows it down. So, I leave that turned off. Me, for RSS, Bloglines does the job. You can also get RSS readers that are desktop applications, just like little programs. And there's a bunch of them, and I'm going to go back to the wiki here. And if you click on that link, where did it go? RSS ideas for educators. That'll pull up a PDF, which I hate, but it does. And here it is. RSS ideas for educators, the 1.11. And you'll see some links to some other RSS readers in this document. This is a great document. And this will cover more about RSS than I could possibly in this session. Unfortunately, it's in PDF, so it's virtually unreadable on the screen, but you can print it out. I just don't like to use the paper. And I so hate Acrobat. So down here somewhere, it goes on. So it's going to introduce RSS for you for a bit. Here we go. So that looks like it's on page 8, more or less. So Blog Lines is the one I just showed you. There's a couple of others. News is Free, which is the most ironically named site because there's a subscription on it. And then NewsGator is another web-based one. You can get, and the desktop ones that I was talking about. And there are some specifically Apple ones, but I don't know what they are. The other thing you can do, and I would recommend this, just search in Google for RSS readers. And there used to be a list. All the Google results are different from me in Alaska. It's funny. Here we go. RSS. This is a bit old, but here's a NetNewsWire works for the Mac, I guess. And is it News? No, it's not NewsGator. There's another one that's really popular for the Mac, but I don't know what it is because I never use Macs. So. But again, any search on Google for RSS readers will find you a fairly large list of software. Excuse me. I'm pretty happy with Blog Lines. It's got some glitches that I'm not thrilled about. But it pretty much does the job for me, and I don't generally use other readers. But you can see now, like those of you, how many of you actually read my newsletter or my RSS feed? Sure, yeah, when I said that. Thanks. Yeah. Why didn't you bother to say? Yeah, well, like last Thursday, you know, I mean, I got up at 7, I flew all day, I went to sleep at about 1 a.m. Yeah, I'm not going to do my... Yeah, I figured it was pretty understandable. And I'll probably, same way, when I go back, it'll be the same thing. Because I was going to say, but now I guess most of you don't read it. That's, you know, having Blog Lines to do my RSS makes doing that newsletter so much easier because I can cover hundreds of stories every day. And I go through those and then pick out the ones that I'm actually going to run in the newsletter. And so I'm very able to get what I would consider to be the best content that there is out there in the day. Now, I don't rely only on RSS, obviously. I also get, you know, I have a bunch of newsletters and mailing lists and things like that that come in my email. But it's interesting because I don't go out searching for this stuff anymore. I used to. When I started it, I used to actually have to go to websites and I'd always be searching for new things or go to journal pages or whatever. Now I've got it set up, it all comes to me. And so I just, you know, access my feeds, check my subscriptions, my email, all of that, and just run through stuff and pick out the stuff that I think is interesting. And then I send it to you. Well, one of you. Yeah, and you're not supposed to read all of it. It was never designed that way. For those, I might as well show it to you.
I got a question. Once you get started on this, how can you stop just looking at it? They come up and they go,
over here on the side of this one is book slot. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I've got to go over here.
Oh, well, yeah. This is why I don't get anything done. Here's the web version of it, and you can see the address right downs.ca/news/oldaily.htm, and you have to get the capitalization right. So it's a very secretive newsletter. And as you can see,
different people write blogs in different ways. They have different styles. And me, I have found that I am most comfortable with the 100-word essay because I'm really lazy. I think it's actually harder, personally. But I have found over the years that short content works better on the web. And, you know, and I really do appreciate people who write, like, you know, long blog posts, and they're very often very good. But, you know, you can only read so many of those. And so I try to make the point as quickly as I can. When I first started the newsletter, and I've sort of deviated from it since, but not by a lot.
When I first started it, I figured, if I'm looking at it, 8 lines would be my maximum. And I don't always follow that anymore, but I try to keep it to that. I used to say, this is a 5, this is a 5.
And the way people are intended to read my newsletter is, you read the little 100-word items, and if you want to know more, you follow the link, and if you don't want to know more, that's fine. And I've found, again, over the years, 6 to 8 items a day is the maximum people will tolerate. So it's really not a whole lot of writing. I write maybe 600 to 1,000 words a day. Mind you, I've been doing that for 5 years. It adds up. Figure, because I only publish weekdays. I wonder how many, you think about that. So, let's say 800 words a day, 200 days a year, because I only publish weekdays. So that's 160. I'm not good at math in front of people. 160,000 in a year. Yeah, 160,000 words in a year. So times 5, that's about 800,000 words I've written in all of it. I must be close to my millionth word. That's funny.
That's how my newsletter works, yeah. I link to and describe and comment on things that other people have produced. For the most part. Now, if you look at my website in more detail, you just go to downs.ca, you'll also see articles that I write, things like that.
I always also include those in my RSS feed, so you never miss the articles. I also take photographs, as you've seen, and I include those because I like photos. But mostly, what I'm trying to do is highlight and link to what other people are writing. And this is the way it works. Right, and Robin Good, he's a media person based in Rome, calls people who do what I do newsmasters. It's a play on webmaster. And the idea of a newsmaster is to gather and filter and then represent. And that's what I do. And the idea here is, if you think about it, if you have enough people doing this, it forms almost a web of content that's being aggregated, commented on, fed forward. Aggregated, commented on, and fed forward. It really does form this thick web. And when you have that kind of structure of information, you get very interesting things that happen. Here's one of them. I'm going back to the wiki page. If I can find it, here we go. And I'm clicking on the link here, up a bit, Technorati.
Technorati is an aggregator as well.
So in a sense, it's a bit like BlogWise, but it doesn't organize things by subscription. What it does is it takes all of this RSS content, tosses it into a great big database. A too slow database. That was for them. And so they're currently harvesting, according to their site right now, 28.9 million blogs.
That's something worth thinking about right away. Here's one of the things that I do. You'll like this. I search 28.9 million blogs for what else? Me. And this is my website. I'll do a search on this. And what this will bring up, now Technorati is not as reliable as I would like, so this will bring up what Technorati will say is all of the things, all of the websites that link to my website right now, or have linked, well, they're saying 20 posts in the last 5 days, which is a lie, but we'll leave that aside. So I go to Technorati, and like I've sent my stuff out or my articles or whatever. Now I can see who has linked to them and commented on them. Like here's Golden Swamp, Judy Breck, who's giving me a deep bow. Isn't that nice? Thanks, Judy, if you're listening to this. And I'm going to be in here somewhere. I don't know where it is because I forgot to check the title. Oh well, I'll just find it. Riff Raff on the Web or Gold in the Swamp. Okay, yeah, this is a bit old. It's from February 12th. Technorati is kind of not good that way. But the thing is, the main point here is I write something. Judy reads it. She says, that's interesting. I think I'll comment on that. So she comments on it, and then, now I subscribe to this blog in BlogLine, so I see it the day that she commented. But if I didn't subscribe, and, you know, 28 point whatever million, I'm not going to subscribe to them all. So if I didn't subscribe, I see what she wrote by using Technorati. And what happens is a conversation develops. Because I say something, Judy says something, I say something back. You see how that can go back and forth. And what's interesting is I'm doing it on my website and she's doing it on her website. We don't all have to come to the same place to have our conversation. We can have our conversations on our own websites, and it's the RSS that creates the structure there, that creates the linkages between the sites. So and it's nice that the top link on Technorati was a nice link. They're not always nice. Diagram from, I don't know what this is. Plan, do, and review. This is, okay, well see, this is one that's new to me. What's interesting, you might wonder, how do I find websites to link to or subscribe to? This is one way. Because here's a site that I've never seen. Plan, do, and review. Looks like a brand new blog. Looks like it was created today. Is this any of yours? No, it wouldn't be, would it? No, it's from Friday. Today's not Friday? No. Last week. So anyhow, here's this person who's, you know, they've got this diagram of that. Obviously they've made this post, and one of the references is to me. And so I've discovered this site about communities of practice simply by searching for myself on Technorati. And on it goes, right? I can search for anything on Technorati. Let's look for whales. Must be the environment. I don't know. I don't usually search for whales. The girl who wants to save the whales. The kids have already seen gray whales. We were hammered at rugby, where rugby is spelled wrong. Okay. Spelled whales wrong, too. Oh, yeah, right, okay. Yeah, we were hammered by whales, yeah. That's funny. Now I want to see that, yeah. in Happy Hopper. And it's a live journal blog. And we were hammered. So that release, anyhow, yeah. Now, the comment was made before the break, and accurately so, that if you have a class of students or something who are creating blogs, you can very easily use something like blog lines to keep track of them. And it's no work. Once you subscribe to it, if something new comes up, it just shows up. I'm going to go back to the UConn Mania. And you guys have, I assume, all put in your links, right? Right? And I'm sure some of you will have anyways. 21? Yeah, you guys are actually better than the other group. So I'll come back here. So, Subarctic Screed. Good one. So I'm going to go to blog lines. Now, this is the hard way to do it, but it always works. So that's what I'm going to show you. What I'll do is I'll simply add, and I'll put in the link. Now it's Blogspot, so the RSS feed for Blogspot. Oh, I could do it this way too. See, here you have to put the exact address of the RSS feed, or here you can just type in Blogspot users. So I'll just do that. Subarctic Screed, and it should just sign me up. And it did. So let's have a look at it. This blog has been started as part of a workshop, da-da-da-da, and it's done by Greg. And let's read the post. And there it is, nice black background. Everyone loves the black backgrounds. And so, let's back up here. So I will subscribe to it, and I'll just leave it all like that, and now it's going to show up here. Now, this will just sort of sit here until Greg puts in another post. When Greg puts in a post, this will show up bold again, and I'll know to read it. So, who else have we got here? Peter, who didn't actually give us his address. Oh, no, wait, that's... Now, why am I... I can't tell where the old ones start and the new ones... Let's just reload this. Maybe there's more. All right, here we go. No. Yeah, Trapper. Is that one of you guys, too? Trapper 06? Well, let's see. We'll find out. It's easy enough to find out, because I'll just I'll do the same thing. Add. And pop that in. And Sunday, February 26th. That's today. So I'll subscribe to it. And let's see what we got here. Oh, see, yeah, it's got to be one of ours today. Many tests coming. Cool. And I'll see them all. You see how easy this is? And so I'm just copying here. This is why I had you put them on, right? So that I can just do this. Yes, I actually planned ahead. I'm very impressed. Oops, that's not what I had in mind. Put it in here. And again, I'll subscribe. Now, you can see how this will take, you know, maybe half an hour to do your class of 20 or 30 students. Once it's done, this is a test. Once it's done, now you just read them as they pop up. You know, you're having breakfast or, you know, your morning coffee or whatever, you pop up blog lines, because, of course, you're using wireless at home, right? And You see all the new stuff from your students. And it takes you 10, 15 minutes. And you're set for the day. And you go into your class, you know who's posted, what they've said, who hasn't posted. You know, and it's so easy that you stay caught up on this content. And you're able to respond immediately. And you know, and if you want, you just click on the link and you're right into their blog and you're commenting. And there, I've done that. Personally, I don't see why anyone would do this any other way. You know, and this whole paper and pencil or pen stuff or even Microsoft Word documents or whatever, to me, is old technology, archaic technology. Technology that is way too much work for the results that you get. This creates an instant dialogue. And my own perspective is very rewarding for teachers. Well, very easy for teachers, very rewarding for students. Also very easy for students, very rewarding for teachers. And I think I've run out of combinations there. Technorati is not alone. Here's Feedster. Feedster is another one of these aggregators. I don't know how many blogs. It's indexing 22,900,000 feeds. So, yeah. And again, you can do the search. Feedster I'm not so thrilled with because when I search for myself, I get mostly my own blogs, which is kind of annoying, or my own posts. Although, see, here's the post. Who's Subarctic Screen? You are? Here's your post. You posted it 21 minutes ago. It's now showing up in Feedster, which means anyone who did a search for any of the words in your post on Feedster would find your post and right at the top of the list because you've just created it. And indeed, if we look here, right, I did the search for myself. Here's Darla's feed or Darla's post, and are all our Baptist children heathen? I don't think that's referring to me. Sometimes you get odd stuff. That is very strange. I don't know why that would be there. And here's somebody else, probably not from our group, no, because it was yesterday, Role of Critical Thinking in Education. And you see why I like this, right? Because, you know, I see all of this stuff, and just almost the instant it's published, I see it. And so I'm able to stay right on top of all of this dialogue. And of course, I don't have to search for myself. I just do. But suppose I was interested in podcasting. And here will be the stuff on podcasting that's been written, well, today. Mostly in the last few minutes. Alright, so whatever this is, the feline connection, I'm not even going to ask. Right, Las Cruces Hourly Weather Roundup. I guess it's a podcast. Brand new podcast. Da-da-da-da. Webmaster Radio FM to broadcast. You can sit here. You pick a topic you're interested in. Any topic whatsoever. Ancient Egypt. And here's the discussion taking place now. Ancient Sun Temple uncovered in Cairo. Now, that, of course, happened today. And we know that because it showed up. Any subject you want, you do your search in Feedster or Technorati or whatever, and you're right up to date on it. It takes you 5 minutes. 10 if you read the articles. So, Ancient Sun Temple unveiled or uncovered in Cairo. Actually, I think that happened last week, didn't it? I saw it in a feed. yeah, so there you go. And of course, if you're interested in this, you would just, well, what else? Blog it. Here's a site that's not on the page, not on the wiki page, because I got lazy. But I go to this site reasonably often. It's called BlogDex. And I don't go out as often as I used to because it's a bit slow and not as reliable as it used to be. It turns out it's really hard to harvest 29 million websites, especially if you're trying to do it every few minutes. And BlogDex just isn't coming up. Okay. Well, that's why I don't go there so often. Let's go to PopDex. Is it? I think it's com. Yeah, here we go. What PopDex does, it only crawls 14,000 sites. It's just a weak link. But what it does, and their BlogDex does the same thing, and so does another one called Daypop. It crawls these sites, and it counts the number of links to a given story, and then it ranks the most popular stories for the moment in order. And so if you're wondering what people on these sites, anyways, people in the blogosphere generally are reading, this is what they're reading. These are the most popular stories. So Jack Balkin, I don't know what's there, so cover your eyes. Again, all this stuff about, you know, not work safe content applies when you're reading this stuff. So something about Bush. Okay. So you could read that if you wanted. Family in Baghdad. Colonel Feinstein's. These are kind of boring. Let's go to Daypop. Daypop's better anyways. There's Daypop. Here are the top 40 links according to Daypop. Right, that's the Google Pages that I talked about earlier. So that's created a... excuse me. Here's my Google page. It's not very good. Yeah, they're just getting killed. They're just getting hammered. Whoops. So that's the top link. MC Hammer. Don't know why that's there. Ooh. Isn't that interesting? Frederick Noronha is an educational technologist and media person. He's involved with an organization called Bytes for All in India. I've known him for a number of years, not personally, or just another internet knowing. So I read his stuff a lot, and he's written about Clinton, okay? And for some reason, that post became the third top link on Daypop. Interesting. He's worth following up, especially if you want to learn about new media and online learning and things like that in India. He's a very good source. And the Bytes for All list and Education India is another list, which are very good, useful lists for stuff about India. BlogHer is a conference for women bloggers that's coming up reasonably soon. And so, that's interesting. The Technorati site for BlogHer is one of the top links on Daypop. You get a lot of that. Remember I entered tags in my Flickr? Well, Technorati supports tags as well. And you can create tags in your blog posts. And then Technorati will create searches specifically for that tag. I'm sort of squiffy on that, but it's moderately popular. And so on. Let's see what else is up. Indian Idol. Well, I guess there would be one, wouldn't there? I wonder, somebody must have won it. Okay. So if you were bored of American Idol, there's Indian Idol. I love the web. I just love the web. I'm throwing a bunch of things at you here, but what I'm trying to draw the picture in your mind of this densely woven, interconnected network of content and people. And it's something we've never had before, ever in history, is anything like this. And, you know, it's only about 30 million people, 30 million feeds. But even so, you know, you get all the sorts of effects that you might get when you get 30 million people densely connected like that. And they're not, everyone's not connected to everyone else, but in this network, you know, you can go from one end of the network to the other end of the network in just a few hops. And you get waves of phenomena through this network. And this is kind of what Daypop taps into, right? Is something just sort of catches the imagination of the network and spikes. And that becomes a top story on Daypop. And it's as you watch this, and again, remember I was talking about, you know, just reading random live journal blogs, also following this sort of stuff, and again, you get this sort of picture of the blogosphere as a whole, and you can see the patterns and the sentiments and the thoughts and all of that just sort of going through this network like a wave. And it's a very different picture of media. Most people, they think of media, they think books, magazines, something static, something that you keep on your shelf, even for a short time. But when you're looking at the internet this way, you realize it's not that. It's something that flows. And if you're thinking about resources and learning and online learning, and thinking about electronic content and content syndication and all of that, you realize that what you're creating when you're creating learning resources is not a static thing that you're going to put on a shelf like a book, but you're contributing to this flow. And it really changes the shape of how you approach learning. So you just create things, whatever, on the fly, as you can, as you want to, the way we're doing with this audio recording. Which I assume is still recording. I better check it. Yep, we're still recording. Hi, audio people. This is why I get excited about this stuff. One of the things I like to do, usually I do it from blog decks when it's working, and not so much Daypop or Pop decks, is I like to compare the list of top stories in blog decks with the list of stories on the front page of the newspaper or on the television broadcast. They are completely different lists. Oh, sure, there's some overlap. When they blew up that dome in Baghdad, that made the top of both lists. Right? It was on the front page of the newspaper. It was also all over the blogs here. So, yeah, you blow up a historical relic, you'll make the news, no matter what the news looks like. But the rest of it's very different. And what I find is that the range of sources in the blogosphere is much wider. You read the newspapers, and the sources are always politicians, company spokespeople, union spokespeople, and PR people, and that's almost pretty much it. Oh, and anonymous sources, I forgot them. But in the blogosphere, it could be anybody. It usually is anybody. And usually is somebody directly involved with whatever it was. I find that much more interesting.
Video is still a problem because there is no single widely accepted standard for video content. Remember I talked about MP3s just sort of evolving into the audio standard? That hasn't happened in video. Almost certainly what's happening there, I would bet that that's probably a WMV, Windows Media Format video. And of course you're on an Apple. Right.
It works both ways, right? Apple has their QuickTime format, which will work on my Windows system, but just laughs at my Linux system. And then there's the real media format, which the connection was reset. That's annoying. There's real media, which will work on any of the any of the platforms, but you have to have the real media player, which is a pain. And there are some other media formats, but we just haven't settled into a common video format. It's slowing things down, and it creates problems like that. I find it, especially since mostly I use Linux, I find it really annoying because a lot of the video stuff just doesn't come out for me. For me, the most reliable video is if it's embedded in a Flash file or something like that, because Flash kind of works on Linux. And it works enough so that sometimes the videos actually work. I also have Real Media, and that also works. But Real Media has kind of dropped off as a popular format. Everybody's going Windows Media or QuickTime. I hate that, because they're both useless to me. So that's what's happening there. So I can probably play it. I'd have to find it again. Where was that? We got that from Daypop, didn't we? That's, lesson number one. If you find something that looks like it might be worth blogging, blog it right away. I have lost more things because I didn't blog it right away, and then 200 pages later, I'm going, no, where was that? Indian Idol. Have I passed it? Must have passed it. There it is. And wait. The Wikipedia article on numerology is on the top list. Go figure. Sometimes you sort of, like, these top 10 lists in that. There must be a link in here somewhere. I'm just trying to find that video, but do you know what you clicked on to get to it? Yeah. Oh, well, I'm not going to worry about it, because it's just a video that's not working. It's just another day on the web. Oh, no, that's fine. I'm always perfectly willing and usually an active participant in being sidetracked. So. Now, remember the audio that I was talking about, the uploading of the audio and audio and all of it. If you take uploaded audio content and you mix it with RSS, that is podcasting. And basically what a podcast is an RSS feed with links to audio files. That's all it is. And for that, Adam Curry became famous. No, I'm just kidding. He was already famous. But not to me. I'd never heard of him before. So. And so, if we look up podcasting, I'll look up podcasts, see if I can't find a list. NPR Podcast Directory. See, in Canada, my top list would be CBC Podcast Directory. And things are being a little slow here. We look at these podcasts that they have. And there should be an actual podcast link here somewhere. Here we are, NPR Podcasts. And I'm going to try to actually open one of them. Sometimes it's a real pain to get into these things. Is this it here? Yep. Here we go. So look pretty familiar, right?
It's an RSS file. And what they've done is they've added some iTunes tags so it'll show up in your iPod. You don't have to add the iTunes tags. But what makes the podcast
is this thing right at the bottom, enclosure.
Kind of hard to read, but this here is a link to an MP3 file. And what will happen is, if you subscribe to this podcast using podcasting software like iPodder or something like that, this MP3 file will automatically be downloaded for you. And then when you plug your iPod into your computer, it'll be automatically loaded onto your iPod. So basically, for you, it means leaving your iPod, your Podder program running. You plug in your iPod in the morning, you leave it for a few minutes, you go, you have your coffee or whatever, you unplug your iPod, put it on shuffle or player or whatever, put your buds in your ears, you walk to work, and you're listening to your pods. And again, it's easy. And that's all there is to it.
So anyone can create a podcast. Just create an RSS feed and add an enclosure element. Or, if you want to do it the even easier way, as I mentioned before, use something like Odeo. And there's another one called Blog Matrix. Now I want to mention them because they're Canadian. And actually, I think certain ways they're better, other ways they're not better. Sorry, David, I didn't mean to say that. And they have a product called Sparks. And again, Sparks is a tool that will allow you to create and upload audio files, and it's running a bit slowly. Of course, that might be just the network right now. So have we hit the new stuff yet?
For you guys? Or?
Cool. Well, I wasn't sure, because I, the introduction to that, I knew there was a pretty good base of experience to start with, so I wasn't really sure. There we go, this is Blog Matrix Podcast Hosting. Again, another free service. And their model is, as I recall, at least the last time I looked at the site, their model was similar to Flickr's. And maybe one day they'll sell their service to Yahoo, and they'll get rich too. There'll be more Canadian millionaires who have sold their companies to an American giant.
No, the Canadian
model for business development is you come up with something really innovative and neat. You get it up on the web and commercialize it, and then you sell it to Yahoo or Google or Microsoft, and then you move on to your next product. And a lot of these things that you're seeing here are Canadian things. Like Flickr, for example, who started in Vancouver. Blog Matrix, which I'm showing you here. I forget where they are. And an awful lot of these web services were actually developed in Canada and then bought by American companies, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that. They can produce rich Canadians all they want. I'm all for it. But it's kind of a funny way to have an industry, though. Okay, where was I? I'll show you a few things. Here's a site. This is kind of an interesting site. It's called Superglue. And the way this works, remember you were talking about you can have a blog for this and a blog for that. And also, Flickr, if you have an account on Flickr, you can have an RSS feed of your Flickr posts. And there was some talk of social bookmarking. I haven't really mentioned that yet. But if you have an account with Delicious or Furl, you can have an RSS feed of your Delicious or Furl posts. So you're up there. You can have like 5, 6, whatever, different RSS feeds. It's really annoying. But if you use this site called Superglue, and actually I'm going to go to a specific example. And I'm sure it just popped up on top, but it didn't. Why not? Isn't that weird? Oh, that's the problem. Okay, thank you. Whoops, I guess the slash won't help either, eh? Oh, isn't that weird? Yeah. There we go. No, I didn't. Oh, that's what happened to me. Okay, it's sort of... that's kind of... Let's try this. I'm getting this. This pardon? No. Very annoying. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't know why Google's failing me here. Again, this is one of these searches, works fine at home. Doesn't work in Alaska. Yeah. Well, I'm here. Yeah, I was looking for a specific Superglue account so you could see it in action. But, no, let's pick random Superglue. That'll do. So, Dave's Pharma News Remixed. Again, this might not be work safe. So, basically, it comes out looking like a blog. And you can't really tell by looking at it, but what it's doing is aggregating all the different feeds, all the different RSS files from the different accounts, and producing one overall feed for them. So it's a place where you can have all your photos and all of your bookmarks, any audio that you may have uploaded through Odeo or whatever, your blog posts. Maybe you have a blogger one and a live journal blog or whatever. Maybe you have a wiki that produces an RSS feed. A lot of them do. And it all shows up in the same place. This is known sometimes as feed splicing or feed, well, these days feed gluing. And the idea here is to take multiple feeds and blend them together into a single feed. So now I've played with this a bit. I'm going to show you a couple of things that I've done. Because the thing with Superglue is, once again, you're creating an account and a password. I hate that. So I got very tired of that. I created something called MyGlue. And what MyGlue is, well, right now a parsing error. That figures. Sometimes you just can't win. Here's a working example. Let's see. Yeah. MyGlue does the same thing as Superglue, except instead of creating an account somewhere out there on the web, you just simply create what's called an OPML file. And I'll show you one if I can. Yeah. See, I don't care. Like, my system doesn't care if it's broken. This is an OPML file. It looks a lot like an RSS file. It's XML again. And basically, all an OPML file is a list of RSS feeds. That's all it is. And again, you can make one of these easily with Notepad. Or there are OPML editors, and I have one on my website, in fact, and you can use those. And what my glue does is it reads this OPML file, says, okay, I'm going to take these feeds and glue them into a single feed. And so here's the my glue for my feed. And so you can see the feeds. It's harvesting my delicious feed. It's harvesting OL Daily, and it's harvesting my photos. And there's my photo that I uploaded earlier in Flickr.
And so it's sitting in Flickr right now. Flickr automatically produces an RSS feed for me. No problem, right? And my glue has now harvested that along with my other stuff. You can see my other posts from my weblog, things like that. And it's included my photo.
So this is my version of Superglue, but no accounts, no logins. And if you wanted, you could just copy this web page. It's a very simple thing. I've taken that a step further because I could. And I created what I called RSS Writer. And you notice I'm missing the E there because that's the new way of naming things where you just drop vowels. This is my prototype of, and why isn't it showing up? Oh, I see. Okay, never mind. Of what is eventually going to become the personal learning environment. A lot of you have worked with learning management systems and things like that, and they're for the most part institution based. And the idea of the personal learning environment is it's your own space. If you're a student, this is your space. And so this is just a prototype thing. So it doesn't really work that well, but it works well enough. So I pick my content source, and on the left-hand side there, don't worry about the formatting, here is my glue. And I can have a number of, see, here are the posts from my website. It takes a few seconds because this version harvests live and hasn't cached for a little while. So here's my website. Again, formatting's awful. And EduRSS. So I'll go back to the MyGlue. Here's the picture that I posted. I'll just drag that in here. And this is an editor. Here I am at the seminar. Anchorage. So, and no town, me. And I'll just scroll down here. What is my user ID? It must be Downs. You're not seeing this bit. And I'm submitting that. Now, you remember my Yukon Mania blog in Blogger? Here it is, right? There's the post.
Now think about that.
I wrote RSS Writer in an afternoon. In addition to quite literally 5 lines of Perl code, Perl is a scripting language like PHP, and the program quite literally is 5 lines long that takes this input and sends it over to Blogger. Everything you need to make RSS Writer work is here. It's all just JavaScript and HTML. This is the future. Because what it's doing is it's tapping in to this web of RSS feeds. allowing me to bring them together, and the MyGlue application doesn't just splice feeds together, it also allows you to filter them according to keywords or whatever. So you can actually bring together feeds from a large number of sources, all focused around a single topic, and the reading and the writing and the posting all happen in exactly the same place. And it's personal, it belongs to me. It's not on an institutional website or anything like that. It's mostly, it's just on my browser. Except for that 5 lines of Perl code. But that 5 lines could be anywhere because it's so easy to install and run. So, imagine this, something like this, where you can read, drag, drop, edit, publish, all in a single space in your students' hands. Or in your hands, if you're creating educational resources. Or in both of your hands, if you're having a conversation back and forth. And it really changes the dynamics of educational resources. One of the things that I've done is I created a thing called DLORN. DLORN stands for Distributed Learning Object Repository Network. And what DLORN is, it's an RSS aggregator, a lot like Technorati or Feedster or Bloglines. But it taps into websites that host learning resources, preferably free learning resources, like Creative Commons learning resources, but anything, really. And so here's stuff that was uploaded today. And the funny thing is, I haven't done anything with DLORN for a year. It just sits there and runs and loads these resources. Some student databases and higher order thinking, whatever that is. Somebody out there loaded this onto a learning resource site somewhere, and DLORN just sat there and aggregated it. You are a teacher, and I don't know if this search will work, but I'll try it. I've really been sloppy in keeping this up because it's just demonstration stuff. You have a class to do on whales. And did I misspell whales again or something? Yeah, but, well, whale craft. Here we go. Now, I'm not harvesting this right now in the RSS writer, but I could easily just add another line to that OPML file. So, you've got a class on whales this afternoon. You sit down, you have your lunch, your coffee. You tap into whales, you drag a few of these resources over into your RSS writer, add a couple of notes, hit submit, and there's your class plan, or your resource, or whatever. And it's funny because the whole of educational technology to this point has been devoted to the creation of learning resources, mostly by publishers and companies that your organizations will buy and store in big databases and things like that. And yet, you can create these things on the fly for less time than it takes you to find the commercial resource in your own library. And it's a better resource. And it's free. And your students can access this resource and rewrite it and post it to their sites, where it becomes another new resource. And so the cycle continues. And the picture here is not resources, but a flow, a learning flow, where the learning goes back and forth, and the learning that's produced by a teacher one day is reproduced by a student the next day, is rewritten and added to by a student in another country the next day. And they all feed back in because they found it in Technorati. And if they didn't like the way it came out, they comment in their blog, and the person who redid the resource reads the criticism. So that's the picture. That's why I get excited about this stuff. And I just cannot imagine doing it the old way with books and pre-made content and like that anymore. It just, I look at this, and I've immersed myself in this, I just cannot imagine going back to that way anymore. It makes no sense to me. This is probably a good point for a break, because I need one. So let's take 10 minutes. Anyone know what time it is now?
2:33.
That's a great time for a break. Okay, audio people and video people, if you're still with us, I'm impressed. And so we're going to take 1 second off here. And we're taking 10 minutes in this room for everybody to stretch their legs a bit and think about things. See you in a bit. Okay. We're back from our break. That's for the benefit of the audio people. Hi, video people. Oh, you probably can't see me because he's focused on the wall. I don't know what he's looking at, actually. Shouldn't I be looking straight into that? No? Okay. So, those of you on video, you're getting art film right now. So, here's Steve Downs done by Dally. Right. Oh, I should have had a career in media. I should have. Okay, well, that was RSS Writer, and that was a lot of fun. What's this? Oh, Whalecraft. I'm going to come back to the JotSpot wiki. Because, believe it or not, there's more. There's a whole other dimension that I haven't really talked about at all, and I'm just going to cover it a bit more lightly than I would have liked to. For those of you who are following along on the wiki, we have now reached the afternoon part, which is kind of funny. Oh, I find it kind of funny. I knew this when I was setting this up, but that's okay. It's one of these things. They'll all know about blogs. That'll take 5 minutes. Because everything I've talked about so far has been about content. Content production or organization and recycling and all of that. But if you've spent any time on these sites, and we've seen this already a bit this morning, a huge key element to all of this is the social element, right? Groups, communities, networks, and all of that. And I don't have it in the wiki, but I've got a paper out there somewhere on the web called The Semantic Social Network. I can probably find it. Here I am using Google again to search for something that I wrote. And there's actually a few posts. Yeah, I don't really like that link, but oh well. And what this paper describes basically is the way all of this RSS stuff is going to mix and merge with social networks. Or in other words, definitions of groups of people or communities. And so if anybody wants to go put that on the wiki, that would be great. Because I'm not going to... Because I've discovered it's really hard to update a wiki and lead a seminar at the same time. Who knew? My history in social networking actually begins with MUDs. MUD stands for Multi-User Dungeon. And it's probably the top item under MUD, so I'll just try searching for that. And the MUD connection, yeah. See, normally you'd think if you look up MUD, you'll find stuff about MUD. But no, on the internet you look up MUD and you find stuff about multi-user dungeons. So what these are online games where multiple people log into the same environment and kill each other.
EverQuest.
Pardon?
EverQuest. Otherwise known as EverQuest.
Yes. EverQuest is is a modern version of a MUD. The MUDs that I used to work on, this is back in the late 80s and early 90s, you would access them using Telnet, which hardly ever works these days anymore, and they were all text-based. But the main thing about these MUDs was the community. In the internet age, we have instant messaging. You're probably all familiar with it. I've always used ICQ, because ICQ was the first of the instant messaging clients, and I continue to use it to this day. And so here's my ICQ. As you can see, it just runs as an application on my computer. Well, when it runs, it'll come up here in a few moments. Here we go. And what makes instant messaging work, and you'll see this pop up on the screen, is, man, that's slow. I don't know why, there we go, it's going to do that to me again. As you can see, a list of contacts. Now, my ICQ use is declined, so my list of contacts is now two people on ICQ. What do you do? But the whole point of an ICQ system or any of these others is you can send an instant message to somebody just by typing it in and it pops up on their screen. Most people these days use things like MSN Messenger or AOL, whatever it's called, and there's another one, but I've forgotten what it is. Pardon? Oh, Yahoo Messenger, yeah. And I've used them. I have accounts on them, but I don't use them very much. Again, because most people aren't there. ICQ is neat. And if you've blocked ICQ on your networks, and you probably have, you'll be interested to know that you can access ICQ, you can access your own ICQ by clicking on this link, and you get into your ICQ account just off the web page. So unless you've blocked the ICQ website, you haven't blocked ICQ. But of course, you shouldn't block ICQ. What has really been taking certainly the ed tech world by storm, and probably the rest of the world by storm, is Skype. You're all familiar with Skype. I like Skype. And as you can see, and again, it's going to take a little while to launch here. I love it. 262 million downloads. Of course, like 45 of those are mine. I have considerably more connections on Skype than I ever had on ICQ. And again, it's funny because I mostly use Skype as a chat tool. Although, of course, as you know, you can call people up on Skype and have audio conferences. And they've just rolled out the Skype video. And you can see the people who are set up with their video cameras there. There's James Farmer. He's the guy who does eduBlogs.org. And some others. The World Bridges, which is the EdTech Talk people. All of these people connected with Skype. Remember I talked about EdTech Talk. I've done some things with them, and basically, I just called them up, or they called me. I always use a headphone with Skype, otherwise you get echo. And so I had the headphones on, they talked to me, I talked to them, they broadcast it live around the world, and it's now also a podcast. For me, all it was really is putting on the headphones and talking. That's all there was to it. Well, actually clicking on the button that starts Skype, but actually you don't even have to do that because it launches automatically when you turn on the computer, so I didn't have to do that. But I did have to click the little green button that answers the phone. So there was a lot of work there. So there's no Skype video for Apple yet, but everybody's waiting for it, and it'll probably come out not too long from now, one assumes. So I want to see it anyways. Again, though, what I'm trying to draw out here is the network or group of friends that you connect to, and there's ways of defining that. And this network corresponds to actual communications with people. And the other thing, too, if you look at my Skype list here, right, it's Prince Edward Island, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Australia, North Carolina, California, don't know where he is, he's away, Vancouver, don't know where he is, Will Richardson, I think he's in New Jersey or something, World Bridges is wherever they are, Arizona, he's in Vancouver, Darcy's in Calgary, Josie's in Britain, Mr. B is traveling to Europe. He'll still be on Skype. Rob Walls in Saskatchewan. You get the idea, right? They're all over the world. This is why I travel so much, because I want to see my Skype buddies. Okay, so that's one thing. So we've got groups that are created that way. We've also got wikis, and we talked about wikis a little bit, and before the break, I defined them as a web page that anyone can edit, and some of you have been busily editing the page for this session. That's classic working in a wiki. I used JotSpot. I have a wiki on my own website. That's not it. That's the source of something or another. And the wiki on my own website, I mentioned earlier, I've blocked it with login access just because of wiki spam, which is a miserable, horrible phenomenon. But here's the wiki that I use. This is running on my web server. Remember the WordPress with the PHP and the Drupal with the PHP? The wiki software with the PHP, again, 10-minute install. Now, this particular instance is heavily customized, so, I mean, it's, you know, it was a bit more than 10 minutes, but there's quite a bit of wiki software out there that you can install very quickly and very easily and have a wiki up and running and being spammed in no time. And so I use it for, I use it as a scratch pad because it's a really easy way to just write stuff and put it up. As you can see, I thought about putting this session on this wiki, and then I realized, oh wait, no, you have to log in, none of you will be able to edit it, so I put it on JotSpot instead. So, but if I wanted to, here's my page, and so, well, that's not going to work. Well, I know what the link is. Wikis, except for JotSpot, wikis typically have what they call wiki markup. So what I'm doing here is I'm typing a link in wiki markup. And it's actually kind of annoying. I like the JotSpot with the what you see is what you get interface. I think that's better. So, and there we go. I've edited my page. And now I have a link to the JotSpot version. So people won't be confused by my links anymore. Popular wikis, I think MediaWiki. Yeah. Is a fairly popular software. And, is it QuickWiki? I think is another one. I'm not sure. I imagine we can find wiki software fairly easily. You notice how Google functions as part of my brain? Yeah, wiki software. Where else but on Wikipedia? I suppose I shouldn't have to ask, but how many of you have heard of Wikipedia? Whole room. Okay, don't need to tell you about it then. Except that it works. And this is the weird thing. It works. And, you know, I mean, there have been controversies about, you know, inaccuracies and that in Wikipedia just over the last few months, and it's interesting to me because I was right in the middle of it. So one of the wiki pages that was altered, the way they altered it was to remove me. So it's kind of personal. But that said, even being the person deleted, I still vouch for the accuracy of Wikipedia. And certainly it's a lot more useful than an encyclopedia, and I could not just simply pop into an encyclopedia the way I can pop into Wikipedia. And my RSS writer that I showed you before the break, I haven't set this up yet, but on the drop-down list of sources, one of the sources will be Wikipedia, because I can set up my MyGlue application in the writer to do a search. So you type in your search, you select Wikipedia as your source, and up pops these links on that side, and then you can drag and drop and edit and rewrite the content straight from Wikipedia. And so that's why I've put the link here, Gollum. And what Gollum is a simplified interface to Wikipedia. And it's recommended for students or people who find it. Wikipedia itself, the main page, they're really cluttered pages. And they have all kinds of links and all kinds of stuff. Gollum is a very simplified presentation of the same content, but without all the extra links and edit this page and all of that stuff. So it provides a pretty easy way to use Wikipedia in a classroom without being distracted. Oh, this was added, wasn't it? I should have stayed with the link. Bering Strait School District's Open Content Initiative. We're seeing a lot more of this kind of thing. Now, this one's new to me, but it's still absolutely worth looking at, he says without having looked at it before. But it's like in South Africa, they're putting the South African curriculum on a wiki. And there's a project out there called Wiki Textbooks, which is, they're producing textbooks on a wiki. I have mixed feelings about the utility of that. Consider all the stuff I said about the dynamic flow of content. I'm not so sure about textbooks on a wiki, but my perspective, it's up to the community. And, you know, if people do it and if it works, then great. And if it doesn't work, well, nice try and we'll move on to something else. And, you know, it doesn't really matter because all of this stuff, really, the only cost is the effort of the people to produce it. Well, I could. I mean, a textbook is a huge blob of static content. And to a large degree, huge blobs of static content are not as useful in a dynamic electronic environment. You know, minimally, you want to present that content in such a way that you can access and refer to small bits of it. And if you think about the way you use a textbook in a classroom even, you know, you never use the whole textbook in a single class. You'll refer to a few pages or a chapter or a lesson or something like that. So even in a classroom, you're using only bits of textbooks. And typically you'll mix and match textbooks, you know, and pick some from here and some from here. So already, you know, in a live classroom environment, you're already beginning to mess with that structure. So I just don't see the value of emulating a delivery structure that we abandon at the first moment possible. And so I think that the content that you would find in a textbook is very useful. But I would present it personally as an unordered, largely unordered sequence of related materials. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't hate the idea. I'm just, you know, I just think that the same thing could be done slightly more effectively.
Was it, I mean, I haven't looked there enough at that, but is it more misnomer than for them to call a textbook?
Yeah.
I mean, aren't they able then to present each and every little bit of their curriculum in a way that's meaningful and relevant without having to present a single source? And if they decide that this piece right here isn't relevant anymore, they can take that out as opposed to, you know, some today
sure.
We're going to take this math textbook to come hell or high water.
Right.
And if we find that one piece we don't want, we don't have to replace the whole textbook.
Yeah.
Pieces.
And that's what they should do. And really, You consider, like I look at a textbook and I think of it as a whole bunch of blog posts. Metaphorically, right? Not necessarily literally, but metaphorically. Whole bunch of blog posts, and then you pull from that and aggregate whatever is going to be relevant to you at this point in time now. And that'll be different tomorrow. Count on it. And so it's this, so you have a picture, right, of these scattered resources wherever they may be, and then these different views or different interfaces to those resources, where these interfaces are defined as RSS feeds or similar types of metadata feeds. And that's the picture that I have. Now, how that works in practice is probably a lot more complicated, but it's something like that. And that's why I consider this whole social networking thing to be important and interesting, because if you have a million resources out there, and you're trying to pick what ones are relevant to you now, the definition of a social network, whether it be through Skype or Wikipedia buddies or whatever, is enormously useful in helping you select and filter those resources. What kind of resources would you want from all of those educational resources? Well, they'd be the kind of resources that your friends have already used. Or they'd be the kind of resources that people who are like you have used and rated well. You know what I mean? And so the social connection, even though it's not a semantic connection, it plays an important semantical role. And that's the whole idea behind the semantic social network, is you're using social connections in order to create and extract semantic data. That hasn't happened yet. That's what is beginning to happen with this whole phenomenon they call Web 2.0. But it hasn't happened yet. And when it does happen, the web now looks very different. Because now your community, wherever they might be located, becomes almost the entity that defines what will be relevant and interesting. Well, even... No, I didn't want to say it that way. It's the thing that recommends things to you. And I have a link later on recommender systems and that. But if you think about right now, the way media is selected for you is typically through an anonymous third party, like a newspaper editor, a publisher, even a teacher, right? Somebody else selects stuff for you, and you sort of have to go with what they pick. But what they pick, usually because it's being picked for a very large group of people. You think television broadcasting, right? They're picking a television show for an audience of 10 million people, right? And so what they pick will not be necessarily of most use or relevance to you. But if you have a mechanism that allows you to associate these selections with your community or with networks of people who are similar to you, then the picking of resources can be very fine-tuned. It can be very narrowly defined to the sorts of things that you would find interesting. That doesn't mean that, if you're Republican, you only get Republican sources. There is that talk. But what it does mean is that if you're Republican, you're not going to get stuff on fly fishing necessarily, unless you're already interested. But you're not going to get stuff that just comes completely outside your sphere of interest. That was a bit of a tangent, wasn't it? That's okay, though. So, here's all the site-specific information. I'm not going to go through this, but it's a good link to have on the wiki page, and if you're listening on audio, you really should take a look at this. These open content initiatives are springing up all over the place. And that's why we're going to run into the problem, the question of how to select materials. It's the weirdest thing, because for so long, publishers have been saying, well, unless you pay people to produce content, nobody will produce content. And now the problem is not the lack of content, but there is so much content, and most of it out there is free. And the big problem is finding it. which is why all of these metadata initiatives have started up, and all of these network initiatives have started up. And there is no shortage of content. Well, we saw the Creative Commons photos on Flickr, right? Millions of photos. And the trick is to find the ones about whales. I want to show you this. This is neat. This is relatively new. It's called Writely. Now, of course, you need a login and a password. I really hate this. It's so annoying. And keep me signed on. Yeah, I haven't used it on this computer yet. That's why. So, what Writely is a document editor. It's a lot like Word, MS Word. And it functions in pretty much the same manner. It might not function at all if you're using Safari because, well, you know. And I can go in here and I can just start editing. Oops, didn't mean to do that. And it will actually save it on the fly, or I can specifically save it. It's a Word editor. But the thing is, and this was another way we could have gone with this session, you can edit it at the same time I'm editing it. We all edit it at the same time. And it's all live. Writely is an early example of Web 2.0 technologies. And the main thing about Web 2.0 technologies, I guess I should sign out of Skype, shouldn't I? Get a call here. I'll sign out of ICQ too. Yes. Rule number one of presenting, turn off your messaging center. And you can't really see this to look at it, so I kind of need to explain it. The way Web 2.0 works is that when you go to a web page, that web page is engaged in a dynamic interaction with a web server supporting it. Well, okay, what does that mean? That means that when you type something, it's saved not just on the web page, but on the server. And what's happening in the background are what they call HTTP requests. They're types of JavaScript functions. It just automatically just sends information back and forth, and it basically keeps this web page in sync with whatever is on the server. So it's like live updating. It's updating that happens in real time. See, so the whole create something, save something cycle has been eliminated. Right? You don't do the save something part of it. You just type, it's just there. Now you might think, well, big deal. But the deal is you get stuff like this, where you can have content and people are just typing it and somebody else is there and they'll see the typing show up. And they haven't reloaded their page or anything. They're still typing, you're typing, and you just have this bunch of things all happening in the same place at the same time. It's my RSS writer. Again, also uses the Web 2.0 stuff, so that how do I want to put this? It's a hard concept, but it's a simple concept. But the idea here is that the updating happens at the same time as the writing. The way people describe Web 2.0. The cliche version is it's changing the web from a medium to a platform. It's changing the web from a place where you go to consume media, to read things or whatever, to a place where you go to do things. And anything you can think of doing, you know, whether it be Word or an Excel spreadsheet or whatever, now you can do live in real time with other people all in the same place on a web page. It's like your browser has suddenly become a multi-purpose application. And the other thing about Web 2.0 is that all of these applications, and I can't even get into the list, but if you do a search for something like Web 2.0 applications, these all connect to each other through APIs, application program interfaces, or through feeds like RSS feeds. So you're doing something here, it shows up over there, it shows up over there, it brings in stuff from here, and it all happens at once. And you've probably heard about all the promises of the semantic web and web services and all of that. That's what this does, except without the semantic web and web services. It turns out we didn't need all of that stuff. All we needed were simple ways for programs to communicate with each other and with their users. That's all we needed. And this whole, all the overhead with web services discovery and UDDI and all of that, not needed. It's the funniest thing. But it's like RSS. So RSS, right? Item, description, link, that's it, we're done. Right? That's semantic web on the cheap. And it's the same thing with Web 2.0. Web 2.0 is web services on the cheap. Web services that actually work, and you don't need an enterprise server and major Java installation and all that to make them work. So you can imagine all the sorts of exercises you could do with something like WriteLink. You know, instead of assigning each person in your class to write a paper, assign your class to write a paper. Kind of funny, isn't it? You sort of wonder how that would turn out. I think people would learn more than just writing in such a thing, in such an environment. Now I'm moving into social networks proper. And Friendster was one of the earliest ones. I don't really like it so much. But Orkut is Google's version of a social network. And of course there's a password. I am so sick of this. And basically Orkut's a classic social networking system. Oh, right, I changed that because somebody was editing my Google page. what did I call it? All right. I'll have to change that back because I might not remember it in the future. There we go. The stupid thing is I changed my password on Gmail and it shows up in Orkut. Basically, the way this works is you have a list of friends. Here are my friends, including one dead one. It's been dead since the 1980s, but there you go. And the friends join together to form communities, including Orkut's most beautiful people, which is a very large group. I like the Ivan Illich group better, because they're mostly educators. And any group will have a bunch of members, and you can start following the members, and the members have friends, and well, you get the picture. Orkut, the problem with Orkut is everything's in Orkut. Right? You have to go to Orkut to see your friends. You have to go to Orkut and log in to access the groups, and all of that. And so you can't use that information elsewhere. It's all locked in this silo. But there are initiatives out there, like Friend of a Friend, or FOF, where, and that's not in the JotSpot wiki, so if anyone wants to add that, they can, where instead of defining your social network inside a social networking service like Orkut, you define it as an XML file, of course. And in particular, a FOF file. And I wonder if I can find one here. Here we go. Now, FOF is much less stable than RSS. and much less widely used than RSS. I think it's going to play a much larger role in the future if we can ever get this file to show up. Come on. Denmark to Alaska is not that far. They're all on DK. That is Denmark. They're all in Denmark. Unable to parse. Oh, I see what's happening. Okay. And the full specification has sort of been changed. Well, that's why I couldn't parse it. I couldn't find it anymore. Ah, forget it. Here's mine.
And basically, it's XML like the other XML files that we found. And it's simple. Name, first name, surname, nickname. I named my nickname is named after up here. That's, you know, mailbox. That's a way of encoding your email address. Homepage. A picture, workplace homepage, which I've made my personal homepage because, well, I'm kind of like that, and then a list of friends. And the idea here is
a full file will tell people about you and, just as importantly, identify who your friends are. Now, the problem with FOF right now is it's not integrated into any of these RSS search network feeds or any of that sort of thing. So it's kind of hanging out there, not really doing anything. But what will happen is that these networks or these kinds of files or some version thereof will become associated with RSS files. And in an RSS file, under an item, you'll see like author and then a full file rather than a name. And so instead of knowing just the name of whoever wrote some article, you'll link to their full file, and that will tie you in not just to the information about that person, but also tell you about that person's network of friends. This is very powerful, because it means that you can do things like find posts about whales written by James Michener or people who are friends of James Michener. And you can sort of see how your view of the web changes, or find posts about whales written by people who are my friends. All kinds of uses, most of which are completely at this point untapped. But they will be. It's coming. It's as inevitable as the spring. Of course, I live in Canada. It's not that inevitable.
Snow yesterday.
Yeah, you know, so orchid's interesting. The people who have really taken to orchid are Brazilians. I don't know why. You just can't understand some of this stuff. And there are lots of Brazilians on orchid.
It says
Well, because it doesn't exist yet, I can't really say for sure. The way I would do it is I'd have, you know, a field that allows you to have a search term or tags or something like that, right? Keyword of some sort, and then a little button that says restrict the search to my friends or something like that, and then it would just pick up from my friends or my network of friends. Oh, I would just use an aggregator, right? Like I'd tap into Technorati or something like that, or in my case, and I think most people will do this, they'll have their personal aggregators, and so the aggregator brings in this content, and then you search that content. I don't need to tell you about this, but for completeness, I'm going to link to it. Yes, folks, it's MySpace. Kind of a blog, right? And so we've got When I was in Edson, I actually started with MySpace, because what I wanted to do is get across the idea right at the top of the presentation that students are already using this. I know it's blocked in every school in the province, but they're using it anyways, and they went in and found people who were living, you know, in their own block, you know, kids in their own community, these little isolated Alberta towns, a lot like Alaskan towns, where, like, you know, most of the people in the school have MySpace accounts, and this is where they express themselves. And again, it's a social networking thing. Let's look at some cool new people. Again, I another account. Just chilling in Raleighwood. Pardon? Yeah. Oh, I'm not surprised. Do you have one? No. Pardon? Oh, Bebo. Okay. And it's being slow. I don't know what they've done. They might have music on this page or something silly. Now, of course, you can search. I'm just curious now. See, I like this, right? Someone got a name of a school. Ren. R-A-N. W. Of course, there's a W. Wrangell High School. That's in Alaska. Alright, so let's put in Alaska here. And let's see. None. Oh, because it's giving me Wrangell. That's silly. Maybe there are none. Pardon? Clarion? Can you spell that? R-I-O-N, University, Pennsylvania. You must know something I don't know. Oh, maybe that's what, okay, Clarion University of Pennsylvania. All right, and here are people at Clarion University. I'm going to try that other one again, because I think maybe I was just too impatient. Oops. Way too impatient. Okay, can you spell that school again for me, please? Okay, Alaska. Yeah, here we go. Oh, yeah, look at them all. I'm not logged in right now. Know any of these people? These are the people who are accessing this blocked service. That's 21 years old. That's kind of old for high school. Must be a former student. Pardon? They're alumni, okay. Isn't that an attractive picture? Let's go back to Dana Boyd's thing about, you know, people establishing their identity. But I mean, like, we got 8 pages of results here, so. Well, that's. Oh, and I'm actually searching between 18 and.
Well, don't forget, somebody saw my friend's email address and. Like a loser at Hotmail.com. He sat down with me for, you know, 20 minutes. Do you know what kind of self-image your son has?
Yeah.
And when I called the friend, somebody said I should be worried about this because, well, I'm so far from being a loser. It's a joke.
So, okay, I guess. Yeah, I would have thought there'd be more, but. But then, oh, because I'm searching through alumni, and I'm actually finding alumni between the ages of 16 and 18. I find that very interesting. Okay, let's see what that brings me. There we go. Here are some more current students.
Now, did they need to be current students when they set up, or does it doesn't automatically change out? You could have 20-year-old current students that they haven't ever changed.
That's possible. I don't know. I couldn't say. Yeah. Here's Clay Aiken. So we got three pages of listings. How many students are in this school?
In the high school, 115.
115, so... Yeah. So, in other words, pretty much most of the senior class is there.
Or the younger ones lied.
Or the younger ones lied. So, headline, Rachel made me do it. So, it's interesting because, like, this guy, Chris, has 70 friends. So... High five?
It's just high, like a child.
Like that? Okay, high five is new to me. Yeah? Yeah, oh, you can't just browse it? No, it doesn't look. No, you can't. You have to sign up. Yeah, can I? Oh, here we go. Browse photos. Oh, it's not going to let me do that. Yeah.
But people.
Yeah, Bebo, you should be able to just go into, as I recall. Yeah, here we go.
Me and the kids use this at school.
Schools.
Do the teachers know about it?
You got to figure. Anchorage. Oh, yeah, okay, it's by city. Right. Okay, here's the schools. I'm just picking one. Bowman Elementary. Well, it's not going to let me. Oh, I can't just browse them. It's so funny. Right? It's like organized and directed according to school.
No, not all of it.
Not all of it, but this particular search is, eh? Yeah, there's colleges too. Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to let me look inside. I actually have to sign up. But, hey, you know.
You could look at different.
Yeah. Let's go back home. It should be able to just, yeah, well. I'll just pop into some profiles randomly here. So, well, okay, I can't read the title of that on a family-oriented podcast. Right. So, this is what social networking has become. And I find it personally fascinating. I gotta back out of here though before I get into trouble because we are being videoed. I forgot about that. And like Hi Fi, Bebo, MySpace, and there are many, many more of these. And again though, it's the same phenomenon. It's people connecting to people. And when this connects properly and fully to content and all of that, now you've got this very rich, very dense set of connections in which communities form like clusters and in which content sort of ebbs and flows and goes back and forth like, well, memes or fads or whatever. This is where you're trying to teach in this environment. And that's the part that's really hard to get. Right? Because people think, you know, online learning, e-learning, let's take some learning content and put it on the web and all the students will go there and read it. And they don't interact with the web that way. Here's another instance of collective or group behavior, and this has been mentioned a few times already. Delicious, or as I always pronounce it in my head when I see it, delicious. But the dots make all the difference in the world, right? I just cannot look at that word with the dots in there and think delicious, right? It's del, isio, us. And of course there's a login, sigh. And I think I got downs on this one. I was in there pretty early. Yep. Now, I don't use it a lot, as you can see. But the idea here, and they're... Oh, it's not on this computer. It's on the other computer. You can actually get a bookmark. And if you find a page you like, you just drag it into your delicious bookmark, and it'll create the bookmark for you. And what's neat about this, well, here's one. I created a link to my glue. And so far, 31 other people have also bookmarked it. And there are the references to it. So I think that's pretty neat. And when you create a bookmark in Delicious or and in the other things, you can create a tag for it. Here's a tag, Downs. I've got my own tag. Or maybe that was me. Oh, I think that was my own bookmark of that. Maybe I'm looking for my tags. Oh, here they are. Duh. So, yeah, there's a tag, Downs. Okay. Let's go with one that people will actually use, RSS. Oh, I see. These are just mine. Okay, never mind. Yeah. Hang on. Let's go back to Downs as a tag. And we'll view all the resources that anybody out there has tagged Downs. That's better. I am popular. Actually, I'm not that popular, am I? RSS, this will get some good results. These are things that people have tagged. These are references, links, resources that people have tagged RSS. And what's interesting is, if you use popular, now you can find the most popular things tagged RSS. So if you're doing research on RSS, you go to Delicious, you type in your tag. I'll type in whale because it's a theme. I like themes. It's going to search for all the things on whale. And it's not giving me my popular, so I'll just click whale again because I feel like it. And I'll click popular, and now this will bring up the most popular items about whales. Whale spotted in central London. Well, of course. I should have known that. And again, what Delicious is doing and Furl is doing it the same way, and it's an interesting phenomenon, and I think it's an important phenomenon, is people acting individually and autonomously according to their own interests and needs are creating information that, when represented and aggregated together, produces network effects. And the network effect, for example, is the creation of an RSS resource list, or popular stories about whales, or coverage of a topic, or whatever. And so, even by acting autonomously, they're still engaged in group behavior. And that's one of the essential properties of the network, as we're seeing it evolve. If you look at all the technologies that we've looked at so far, the blogging, the podcasting, the social networking, the MySpace accounts, and so on. It's individuals acting autonomously, but through the set of connections, creating collaborative and network behavior.
And I guess that's what I like. My favorite way to use these types of sites are to say, oh, okay, Internet Public Library, I would take that for this website. What else did this person
write
in? And I found the best resources that way.
Sure.
You can say, oh, how'd you do it?
How'd you?
I might give you away my source, but I don't.
Yeah. And if you think about for a moment, think about what you learned about collaboration and teamwork, you know, all back when you were studying collaboration and teamwork, and it never involved autonomous behavior where you just, nobody tells you what to do, right? You know, teams, you always have a team leader, everybody on the same side, sign up for the vision statement, we're all in this together, united we stand, divided we fall, all of that kind of stuff. That's all pre-web. That's where team is defined by identity or similarity of person or purpose. But collaboration and teamwork in a web environment is not defined by the properties of the individuals. It's defined by the connections between them. And these connections can be anything between content, between networks of friends, between using the same set of letters as a tag in order to describe a resource. And it creates something very different, a very different dynamic. And arguably, and I would argue, a better one, a better result. If you got five people together and said, okay, we're all going to go out onto the web and collect resources on RSS, and we all want you to be looking in the same way and for the same sort of thing, that would produce a worse result than completely undirected, unorganized behavior where some of the people just happen to, some of the time, try to find stuff on RSS. You get a worse result with an organized, managed team, which means that we need to rethink organization and management, in my opinion. You sort of see how we're actually doing what the title of this talk said we were going to do, which for me is actually a bit unusual. Because we have moved from very simple individual phenomena like blogs through to something like collective consciousness. Another instance, it does so exist. I hate that. Well, okay, I can't click into that for some reason. I suppose I'd have to go in and edit it. That link, when it works, is a link to a presentation I did for Newton a year and a half, 2 years ago on recommender systems. You've seen recommender systems, they're on Amazon. And we're beginning to see them in blogs and things like that. A recommender system, in the very first instance, again, is this autonomous behavior. You look at a resource, you rate it. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or whatever the rating system is. And based on those ratings, and based on your personal profile, when somebody else comes along, the system recommends things to them. And so again, your autonomous decision is creating a kind of collective knowledge. And this now is a very specific type of collective knowledge. It's an evaluation of the quality of a resource. In Amazon, it's the evaluation of the quality of the books. And it's kind of interesting because in Amazon, you get not just, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down. You get long, drawn-out reviews, a lot of contributed content. And then people evaluate the reviewers, so you can have more or less trusted reviewers. And again, it's a very powerful phenomenon, and you can pretty much evaluate whether or not a book is worth buying by going to Amazon.com. You don't need to read the review in the New York Times. A better indication is that evaluation. Now, in learning, and this is the last thing I want to say, in learning, online learning, take all of this, the whole works, and apply it to educational resources. Things that we use on a day-to-day basis to learn. And there are some things with open educational resources now, and I've linked to some of them. And then there's a link here to my own paper on communities and content syndication and sustainable networks for open educational resources. And because when people are thinking educational resources, they're thinking about producing them and publishing them and distributing them and all of that. And my argument is that the kind of networks, the kinds of systems that we've looked at so far today will produce at little or no cost more educational resources than we could ever possibly use, so long as the barriers aren't there, so long as the sites aren't being blocked, so long as people have access to these feeds of these learning resources, so long as people have the capacity and the right to create educational resources as they're doing education. And in my view, that's the future of online learning. And that really genuinely is everything I want to say. Well, no, that's a lie. I could go on about all of this for, well, any of these items for a long time. Well, we've covered a spectrum, right? And we haven't delved deeply into any of these. We could have done like an afternoon session on Delicious, for example, as I'm sure you can attest. We could have spent all day on Flickr, or maybe not all day, but and any one of these tools. What is the pedagogy of right-click? We don't know that yet. But we can talk about it again all afternoon. How could you use rightly? What are the circumstances? What would work? What wouldn't work? So this is very much a survey. But what I hope it does is give you, and you, I think you've all already sort of half bought into that picture, otherwise you wouldn't be in this room, but a different kind of picture about the production, the organization, the management of learning in an online environment, where it's something rather more than we create and dish out content, you consume it, but where learners are become actually part of the process of creation and production and distribution. And if we can see that picture, then I think we see a picture of learning that's very different from the picture that we have today, but I think a better one and one that shows more promise for the future. And for those listening on audio, this probably sounds like Lord of the Rings. It's going to end like three times. So maybe I'll stop here. See if there's anyone who has any comments or anything to wrap up. How can you play checkers online if they're blocking Yahoo? Yeah. Well, it's about control, isn't it?
It is. It's a control issue. I mean,
they'll block AOL. Yeah. I remember that.
Teachers are just as much as anybody else. Confining students to get on the website so they must go to the field and then just do something just makes it really difficult. But that's a control issue, that's a classroom control issue, that's behavioral issue.
Sure.
Now, it doesn't really matter whether I have to do this or something, you know, but that's good.
Oh, well, yeah, I remember when I was in school, I didn't have internet in the classroom, but
inside out.
Well, we were all perfect in school because we didn't have computers in front of us. So
yeah, you really don't want to know what I was like in school. I was a terrible student. But, you know, and that really is the choice that we're facing, I think, is, you know, control.
Yeah.
Can we live without control? Yeah. That's my experience, too. The question is that the sort of students that you want to grow up in society where control is the norm?
You don't want that kind of student. I mean, you're holding back good students anyway.
Yeah. Sorry? Which one?
Malmo Sweden to OECD group working on sustainable educational resources. That's just a few weeks ago. Things are beginning to change out there. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of blockage, there's a lot of control, there's a lot of restrictions. There's, you know, a lot of commercial stuff and lobbying and things like that, but things are changing. This year, this time last year, we didn't have 3 or 4 million free images on Flickr. Now we do. This time last year, OECD wasn't talking about open educational resources. Now they are. So it's slow. It's going to be slow because it's a fundamental change. But it's also, it's like democracy. Once you've got democracy, you don't lose it that easily. And I think it's the same way here. Sometimes you do lose it, but mostly you don't. So that's my view, and that's the hopeful view, I guess, that I have to take on this. And it's a different generation that's growing up that, you know, does have friends around the world. It changes your perspective. It's changed mine. I'm a completely different person than I would be because of people I know around the world. Sorry?
Oh,
yes.
It would be pretty bad to have a paper on open educational resources with a list of references that you couldn't access on the web. So, yeah, actually, all the resources that I cite in that paper are things you can freely access. Because that's the way I believe research should be done. Yeah, I know. They say you're supposed to do that, but my view is the link either works or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, the fact that you put the day you accessed it on doesn't make a difference.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to wrap this up. And so for those of you listening on audio, this is where, like, Frodo gets into the book and the movie actually does finally end. He's in the boat now. So thanks all for coming, and I really appreciated having you here, and appreciated being here, and I'll see you all tomorrow when I try to figure out what I'm going to say to a bigger group of people. So thanks a lot.